Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, August the 9th, 2018, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, your first daily dose of happy for this Thursday. We hope your Thursday's off to a great start. Of course, we hope that every single day, but we especially hope it on this day, because today is today. Today is now. There's no other better time than now to hope it. So we hope it for today. Isn't that true, Joel? I mean, we always hope it for now, right?
Well, I think so. That was a whole lot of nows in that statement, but
I'm sorry. I forgot. It's early. I shouldn't be throwing so much like that at you this early in the morning. I forgot. Sorry.
Exactly. I was trying to put the commas in the right place in my head, but if you mess those commas up, Walt, we could be in all kind of problems. But the now, you know, the concept of what we often talk about, you know, the power of now or right now, the relevance of today is where your power lies. Period. It's just. You know, you break it all down to everything else. And when you operate in today, in that moment of today, that's where every ounce of your power exists. There's a weakness in the past and there's weakness in the future, but there's only power in right now. And there's helplessness on either side of that. And it's such a subtle piece of it, but it's such a key point to how you use the law of attraction. And now is it.
You make it sound like almost like it's a water hole in the middle of a golf course where the green is the now, and what was the word you used? The like it's surrounded by water, so it's like water hazards all the way around. Helplessness, I think that's what you called it. So there's helplessness
right.
all the way around.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds like a tough
right.
hole, a really tough hole.
Well, if you've ever seen me play golf, that would not even be a possibility. I mean, it is a really ugly. Ugly, ugly,
ugly. Okay.
Golf.
Well, then we won't ask you to play golf.
There's very few positive law of attraction experiences with me in golf, other than not playing it.
You'd probably appreciate this. I had a friend many years ago who found golf to be so boring. He thought they should change the rules so that you could tackle the guy when he's getting ready to putt. I thought you'd appreciate that one.
Now, then. I would be on board. There's several sports that would benefit from that. I've always thought soccer and hockey would benefit greatly from being able to tackle. You know, that would be great. You know, take out the goalie right before the shot. That would really make it an exciting sport.
The final score would be 3-2 with 5 arrests. So
exactly 5 arrests and 4 concussions. But
that's right.
So. Yeah, but it is really a great you know, when you look at all the surrounding stuff. You know, our topic today, I have in 2 weeks from yesterday, I will be speaking at my hometown's Chamber of Commerce. To me that's coming full circle. That's the first time. For those that know my life story, the concept of me falling horribly in my severe addiction and building my life back up, it's sort of coming full circle. This marks, one time left my hometown of Plant City, Florida, in disgrace and was embarrassed to be seen there. And now that I'm returning to address the Chamber of Commerce, there's very few times I speak that I get nervous anymore, but that is one of the ones that I think, I'm like, wow, that represents so much in my journey. And I'm very excited to be able to do that. And I'm doing the topic of the power of your inner dialogue, the concept that, your inner dialogue is probably the key player in the law of attraction and really everything in your life. It is the most powerful source of energy that we're in control of. And most people do not realize that is where the law of attraction begins. And so I use that. This is a talk that I do often to corporations and people that I'm doing consulting with and meeting with. It is learning to understand just how incredibly powerful what you tell yourself all day is. That is your reality. There is nothing else on the planet that is more your reality than what you tell yourself every day.
That's true, isn't it? And the power of of an inner dialogue. Inner dialogue is not something we normally think about in everyday life. I mean, people who are into self-help and so forth, they're familiar with that concept. But somebody who's just kind of in the normal mainstream, inner dialogue, what are we talking about? What inner dialogue?
If you're sitting there right now, you're probably listening saying, oh God, what's Joel going to ramble on about? That's your inner dialogue. That is your brain talking to yourself. It's a voice. I've heard many gurus will often debate where that voice is coming from. I think it's sort of an irrelevant point. Is it your brain? Or is your mind? Is your mind your brain? You can get really deep in just that subject. It's irrelevant today. The topic of inner dialogue is focusing on when you're alone or when you're driving or when you're in the office. It's not what you're saying verbally that matters. It is what you're saying internally, where you're having a conversation with yourself, where you're thinking about your fears, what's keeping you from doing things, the negotiation you have with your brain about why you can't do something or what doesn't work. I have multiple occasions to really, work with people on adjusting their inner dialogue. There's a term called neuro-linguistic programming. And that is so hard for me to say in the morning.
Just say NLP. That's okay. NLP. We got NLP. That's fine.
Yeah. NLP is the common reference to that. And that is not nearly as complicated as it sounds. It's basically in programming your inner dialogue. It's readjusting your inner dialogue. And in the beginning, when you start talking about that, people don't realize just how important that is, because when you wake up, you have conditioned yourself to believe certain things about your life and your reality. So you repeat that self to you. And then when you want to step out of your comfort zone, you get uncomfortable and your inner dialogue then pulls you back to your comfort zone. Now you don't want to try that. There's failure attached to that. There's struggle. There's suffering. There's all this stuff attached to being out of your comfort zone is what your inner dialogue is telling you. It's a protective mechanism that actually is a defeating mechanism. And it's your greatest ally or your worst enemy. And again, you're in charge of which one. And that you can control your inner dialogue. Your inner dialogue will lie to you, and you can accept that, or you can call out your inner dialogue, and it eventually will adapt to your reality, will adapt to what you believe. I am a loser. I lost everything. I can't do anything right. I'm not successful. I don't have money. I will never have money. I will not have a relationship. Those are things that you are telling yourself, and you explain to yourself why that's true. And you start repeating internally all the mental things that convince you that those are facts. And so you do that throughout a day long enough. That affects your subconscious. Your subconscious is responding to that. So that becomes your subconscious's reality. That's the emotion you're putting out there, and that's where the law of attraction comes in. It's picking up on the I'm a loser, I'm defeated. So the law of attraction says, okay, let's see, your order is you're a loser and you're everything's destroyed, and that's the environment you're seeking, so let me give you more of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what the law of attraction delivers. And that is sort of the key as we move forward when I'm working with corporations and trying to change a corporate environment or a culture where people have a negative self-defeating way of dealing with things. It's very much pervasive in almost every corporate environment I've been in, where there's a negative dialogue amongst the staff, and most people have a negative inner dialogue and they forget what their mission is. I addressed a organization. I often don't have time permission to share the name, so I try to filter that but I addressed an organization that works with youth, handicapped youth and foster care youth and various groups. And they have a large group of employees that they spend a lot of time out in the field working with kids, and they're not the highest paid people in their field. Most of them have, master's degrees, and they're on the lower end of the scale of pay for people with a master degree. They have ridiculous expectations. Sometimes their caseload is, you know, 35 kids and they're expected to see a kid once a month. They have multiple reports to file on each kid. So they have a very difficult job. And the pervasive thought with amongst that crew is it's an impossible job. It's overwhelming. We're underpaid. And that's what they start to believe. So most of them hate their job. They hate their environment. So when I'm addressing all of them, that group in particular, I try to help them identify their inner dialogue of why are you here? You obviously did not get into this field for the financial reward. So why are you, you want to make a living, but you didn't say I'm going to go work with indigent children through Medicaid and expect to make a fortune. So why are you focusing on the stuff that you knew it was going to be?
Right.
It's a paper pushing environment. So why are you focused on what are you there to do? Really? You're affecting a child's life. And then once you get them on track with their inner dialogue and get them to look at things differently, then their reality starts to change. The same job that sucked is now a job that I am on a mission. And the only difference between a job that sucks and being on a mission and this is your life's work is your attitude toward it.
That's true. Although, interestingly enough, we often believe that these inner dialogues, these little voices that we hear, are outside of our control. And yet, as you point out, they right. are within our control. There's a sort of a disharmony that goes on there. You know, there's on the one hand, on the other hand. And how do you resolve that on the one hand, on the other hand paradox?
Yes. Well, that's where you challenge yourself. And again, we've talked about this loosely over the last several weeks and on our show, but there's also a societal approach to sort of supporting that your inner dialogue isn't your drive. It isn't your responsibility. It's because of what happened to you. And my belief and what I think most people when they really get into this process do believe, what happened to you is certainly not your fault or in your control. Your response to it remains in your control. Very important difference to understand that. You can change that inner dialogue and how you look at things. You know, I often tell the story, and I'm going to repeat the story over and over and over again, but how I had life events that seemed to be totally out of my control mentally. I was on a train wreck in life years ago.
Yeah.
And then events happened that had actually, when I reevaluate, were necessary events. So they went from traumas to necessary learning events. And I don't view them negatively anymore. All that changes is my perspective of that. The worst things that ever happened to me are now some of the most, the greatest teaching moments of my life. Big stuff. And I'm in charge of how I view that. I told a story not too terribly long ago on the show about two people who I was working with. It's ironic this happened, but they both had their condominiums burned down. They're not remotely connected, different sides of the country. They both had lost everything. They both, neither one had lost anything. Nobody was harmed. No pets were lost. There was nothing. All that happened while they were not home, their condominiums burned down. They lost everything. One of them remains to this day, literally, I talked to him this week, he remains in therapy for the trauma of his condominium burning down.
Mm, wow.
The other thought it was one of the greatest things that ever happened. He made money. He got to move. He said, God just gave me, delivered exactly. He said, I never thought of my condominium would burn down. He said, but I literally made $100,000 when insurance was done.
Wow.
And he said, he looks at it as like a great opportunity to change. The other was a total victim of what happened. And the only difference between the two people are how they're viewing it. The same set of circumstances took place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it just shows how easy it is to get into that trap. It's really a trap, isn't it? When we believe that it's outside of our control and that, you know, these things happen and there's nothing I can do about it. That's a trap that we put ourselves into.
It really is. One of the things when I first moved to the Richmond area, I don't watch, it's been years right now. It's been 2 years, I believe, since I've been watching any news. But I turned on the local news. I'd moved to the area several years ago. And one of the first shows I remember is this lady, very nice lady, was being interviewed on camera. It was, if it was, I would like to say it's a live interview, but I'm not exactly sure, but it's really sort of irrelevant, but she's having the interview with someone and her and her kids, she's a single mom with two kids and her home burned down. And there was nobody home. They lost everything, but they lost nothing, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she had insurance. So the reporter doing her job, was interviewing his ma'am, you know, what are you going to do? And her response was, oh, we're going to stay with friends for a couple of days. We'll get the insurance check. We'll go get another place. The kids are, you know, actually the kids are excited because they're going to be able to upgrade from the old Xbox to the new Xbox. And so the reporter kept trying to bring her back. But how does it feel to lose everything? How does it feel to lose your pictures of your children? And her response was, well, actually I have all my pictures backed up on the internet. It's stored. So I haven't really lost anything. I can print out all the pictures I want and we can always buy new clothes. I'm focusing on the fact that no one was lost. Our dog happened to be at the vet that day. So really it was a sort of a miracle. We lost, no one was harmed, including our dog. And we're really sort of grateful. So she sort of tried, and finally the reporter said, but ma'am, do you think you're in shock or, And the lady looked at her and goes, I know you want me to cry because that's what gets people to watch the news and tell me how sorry. She said, I am sorry my house burned down, but I'm so much more grateful that I did not lose a family member. I'm financially going to be fine because I have insurance. But you're wanting me to break down and sob on TV because that's the promo you're going to put on to get everybody to watch. They cut away at that point because the lady was so correct that they want the reporter was trying to get the lady's inner dialogue changed to that of a victim versus that of a survivor. And we all face that along the way. You can look at life failures and say, I am just not successful at anything. Or you can say, I have survived all of these failures. I have turned my life around. I'm in the process of moving on. I'm incredibly resilient. That's the same person. It's just how that inner dialogue is addressed. And the only person that can do that is you. I can tell you how to do it, but you have to be able to do it. And so it's a step-by-step process. How do you change it? We want to make it complicated. Like, okay, there's this long equation to changing it. Or the truth is you just change it. And when you find yourself varying from the positive, view of things, you immediately stop yourself and go, that's not accurate. The reality is this. And you eventually, when you change it enough, that becomes your reality.
To what extent does self-confidence play a role in this? Because I would think that if your self-confidence is low, you're going to be much more conducive, shall we say, to being influenced by that reporter who's trying to make you change your inner dialogue to feel bad. Whereas if your self-confidence is good, then you're going to be a lot more resistant to it.
Right. And you know, the self-esteem, self-confidence factor is massive. But again, that is, to me, that is driven by your internal dialogue. So the you're as self-confident as you believe you are, or is your self, you know, conscious as much as you feel you are. Either way, you're in charge of that again with your internal dialogue. Which way do I go? So which direction do I go?
So you're really suggesting that even somebody who's got low self-confidence, low self-esteem, they can still take control and they don't have to wait around for it either.
Absolutely.
They can just do it right away.
It is an instant process that can once you know, it's easy to look at our defeats or our losses. They literally hang over our head and they are instantly recalled. They're stored in a part of the brain that has like, sorry. Remember these times you've done this and you failed? You're right. I have no, yes. Why would I be the one to succeed? Why would I, you know, and you start all that stuff and it's a conditioned response. But when you realize I can pull up whatever memory I want to associate with that, it, you know, there's an association way of you can change the way you associate. When I say Walt, picture a lemon. Well, instantly you are associating a big yellow lemon that, you know, you see, you didn't have to go and search deeply for that. That was brought up immediately when I said it.
Oh yeah, instantaneously.
Because you have that, Yeah, you have all that stored right there. Now, if we want to spend, now this is obviously ridiculous, but if I want to spend a lot of time on this and I want to start showing you a peach and calling it a lemon, then we could spend a lot of time convincing you that this, and then you would start thinking, okay, wait a minute, well, which one's really a lemon or a peach? Or then you have the debate going on. When I said lemon, there was no debate. You knew what a lemon was. If I want to make it a big deal and go on and on and on, at least you're going to have to process that later. It's the same thing. When I understand I'm self-confident, I have great self-esteem, I know that I can never be defeated permanently. I will have loss. I'll have defeat, but I will not be defeated. I've proven that over my lifetime. I have overcome the most impossible odds. I've survived the most unsurvivable mindsets. I've lost. And again, I'm not saying this with arrogance. I'm saying it, you know, I've lost stuff that I never imagined that I could lose or people that I could lose. And while those were horrible events, a lot of them, I'm still here and I'm still surviving. I'm still thriving. So I am a survivalist, you know, not in the way of the, you know, the MREs and go block yourself in the basement people.
But
I'm a survivor of life. I'm a survivalist specialist in a sense. Life has thrown everything at me and I'm still here. And I challenge our audience members to believe no matter what they feel about themselves, they are also 100% successful if they're listening to this at surviving the unsurvivable or, you know, the unthinkable. You have been through a lot, but yet you're still here. You're given this shot of another day, and that's your perspective of things. That's your perspective of you're in charge of that. And that internal dialogue and your perspective, they are basically one and the same. Your perspective is controlled by your internal dialogue, which has a direct effect on that subconscious that we talked about.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And by the way, I want to take a moment to ask our subscribers, because we're talking about people listening in, and I want to ask our existing subscribers, people who listen to us regularly. We're doing an experiment this week and early next week. We're asking all of our subscribers at least once to just go onto your social media and post something, or you know, go put out a tweet or something about LOAtoday.net. Just include the phrase LOAtoday.net. The reason we're doing this is we want to see, this is like an experiment to see, does this help to drive more people to find out about the show? Because that's really the biggest thing that we have going on right now. We know that our existing listeners love the show. I mean, the listening rates, Joel, are just sky high. We're just trying to find what's it going to take to bring more people in. So this is like a little experiment. And we would really appreciate if our regular subscribers just take a moment, go to Facebook or Twitter or whatever you do, whatever your favorite place is to go, and just post something that includes the phrase LOAtoday.net in it, because we want to see what kind of results we're going to get out of that. We think that's going to help actually boost not only the traffic, but the number of people who listen to the show. And for those who are not yet subscribers, we urge you to become a subscriber. The vast majority of our listeners do subscribe so they can get all this great content, like what you're hearing from Joel today. And it really pays off with them. And it's so simple to do. The instructions are right on the homepage of our website at loatoday.net. It takes about a minute to do. And when you're done, you get this constant daily stream of episodes coming right to your smartphone. So take a moment to subscribe and share the fact that you did that. And by the way, we also like hearing from you, too. Joel, you and I don't get a whole lot of people calling in, but we would love to have you call in and talk to us. Maybe you're picking up on something that Joel's saying and because you're listening live. Most of our listeners are listening to the after recording, but some people like to listen live right there on the homepage. And, you know, if you're one of those people, the instructions on how to contact us are right there. You can call by phone or you can connect by the Zoom platform. There are a number of ways to do it. But, you know, give us a call sometime during a live broadcast. We'd love to hear from you. So, Joel, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, it's 8:24 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday morning, August 9th. So people, I actually have heard somebody say, now, was I listening live or was I listening recorded? So, in reality, if you look at your clock and it's roughly that time, we may be 30 seconds off there, feel free.
Yeah.
Give us a call. Follow those instructions. We would love to have your input. It's something that I eventually see the show evolving, and I would love for us to eventually get to a point where we have some callers who bring up topics or issues that they're dealing with, And then we can sort of have a forum, sort of a collaboration or a mastermind meeting, in a sense, live and on air, and help people use law of attraction techniques to get through two things that are dealing with their life. So that's where I see the show going one day.
I think so, too. I think it's going to be really fun when it does that. It's already started to in a small way, but I think it's going to become that in a big way. And that's so much fun to think about, Joel. I got to tell you, that combined with doing it with all you guys, with all my co-hosts, because I love doing it with every single one of you. So combining the two together so we get regular callers and doing this, I mean, that to me is nirvana. So I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
So getting back to what you were talking about, basically what this comes down to is we know that we have an inner dialogue. We know most of us are well aware of it, and many of us are saying it's driving me freaking crazy, this inner thing that goes on. It's like I can't shut the darn thing up. But you're making the very strong case that, well, we can not only shut the darn thing up, but we can replace it with something that we like. We can change the program. That's a pretty radical statement.
Well, and I guess, you know, it's funny when you say it's pretty radical. I guess to the average person, it would be. It's such an accepted belief system for me. It's almost shocking to think it's radical because it's so basic in my understanding in life. And I, you know, and one of the things that where I'm finding that it doesn't serve me well is when I'm working with clients. There's a certain type of client that will attempt to engage my services, and I find myself exceptionally unhelpful. I mean, in the sense that they're not willing to change the inner dialogue. They're bought into their inner dialogue. They don't like the concept, because when I tell you the inner dialogue is in your control and the power of it, if you're sold onto the concept that you're helpless and that you have no hope and that there's nothing there for you, if that's what you believe, me telling you that you have other options kills your narrative. It takes away your excuses.
True. Oh yeah.
And that's huge.
And there are lots of excuses. We get plenty of reasons for excuses. I mean, like in the world of politics, in the news, even in the entertainment realm, and in almost any public kind of forum where there's some kind of discussion going on. We're seeing it particularly in politics today. We've got two different camps here in the United States who are struggling mightily to get us to change our inner dialogue to fit their narrative. And I mean, it's almost like it's a battle for your inner voice that they're looking for, that they're engaging in. They're trying to get you, okay, no, you got to buy into my way of thinking. The other side is the fake news. We're the real news. No, we're the real news. They're the fake news. You got to listen to our side. You got to talk our way. It's like this ongoing thing.
Well, and one of the techniques that they're employing, and again, it's such a negative world that I don't engage in often, but you know, the political stuff, the news, there is a concept, if I say it enough, I'm going to affect your internal dialogue. There's one side, this is fake news, this is a massive conspiracy to make me look bad, or this is a massive conspiracy to make our political party look bad. And there's a shadow government. There's this going on. Then there's the other side that the other people are evil, and all they want to do is do these wars. And so there's an extreme view on both sides. Mm. And what is happening is that ability to look at it from an unbiased perspective. It is programming your inner dialogue. That's what they're doing. And so that becomes your default mechanism. If you really believe that everything that is written by the media is a conspiracy to destroy what you believe in, and you're one of the ones that's a victim of this, then your inner dialogue, no matter what you hear, is going to be filtered. One of the things I love, this is one of the great experiments I love, and again, this is not getting political. Everybody can, don't worry. I don't try not to do that often. One of the things that I heard this guy was giving a public speech, and he was trying to give the concept. He was talking similar to what we're talking about the programming of the media. And so he said, I want to give you some examples. And he went through a list of things. And this is pre-President Trump. This was during the Obama administration, right after in his first term. Mm-hmm. And so the guy went through and he said, I want to read some quotes from President Obama. and he read like 15 quotes from President Obama. This is a very conservative crowd. And every quote was a boo. I mean, boo, boo. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I can't believe he wants to say that. And then he read 15 quotes from George W. Bush. Yay, President Bush, he was a great president. He loved this. And then after he got all that, he told them, and he said, the truth is, all 15 quotes, reverse them. They were President Bush's quotes were President Obama's quotes. He said, the fact is, you were pre-programmed to hate automatically what was being said because of the person. And it's so true, because when you turn on, for example, again, and I'm going to say it right down the middle, so I'm not, it doesn't matter to me which one. When you turn on Fox News, the Fox News has a narrative that they're trying to project to you.
Right.
Then if you turn on CNN, they almost have the exact opposite narrative.
Exactly. That they're trying
to, so what you watch, even if you flip to the other side, like if you're just, all you do is watch Fox News, then you say, I'm going to check on what CNN's doing. I can't believe they're lying against all this. Well, the truth is that they're both, it isn't, the truth is it has nothing to do with the truth. It's about a programming of your inner dialogue, because what most people don't realize is Fox News doesn't care. Fox News wants to make money. So they understand that what they're selling, their package of what they're selling, hits a certain age group that is just, they buy into it and they do it. Then CNN realizes there's a certain age group or a certain group of people that buy into their stuff. So they're looking for ratings using their own sort of a attempt to report the news. The truth is they're programming. They're getting your inner dialogue to buy into their view of it. And then in the end, it translates into profits. And so when you step back from that, what they're trying to do, and look at what you're trying to do, you are in charge of your own programming. If you, anything you turn on, whether it's a radio station, or it's going to the movies, or your window into the mind is a programming, and your inner dialogue then processes it to make it fit your beliefs. If everything in the world is a conspiracy, if you're a victim of everything, if you're unsuccessful, your inner dialogue will make that happen. It's like, yep, okay, yes, this is clearly what goes wrong. I never get a job. I never have these things, you know, and you know, I heard a guy the other day say, he said, this is the lowest unemployment we've had in X number of years, and I still can't find a job. What that means, I'm even more of a loser than I was.
Oh, before. Dear.
Ugh. And I'm like, I said, so you're taking the positive news of low unemployment, and now you're flipping the switch to an entirely different message. Well, yeah, I guess. The truth is, your lackluster attempt to get a job and your poor performance in an interview is why you don't have a job. You don't believe you want to do that. There's a couple of jobs that he didn't take because that didn't fit his schedule. Well, he has no schedule. You don't do anything. You have no schedule, but it didn't fit your schedule. And yeah, I don't know if we've ever talked. I know we have, but I don't remember the specifics. The idea that it's easier to get a job when you have a job.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's easier to find another job when you're working. It has nothing to do with anything other than your attitude toward it, your inner dialogue toward it. I'm already working. I have value. People are willing to pay for my services. Versus I'm unemployed and then I offer nothing, and that energy that's put out there is what people pick up on. Your inner dialogue is the mastermind behind all of this. And it's your gateway to your subconscious. I am one of the things, I don't know if I even told you this, Walt, I'm in the process, on top of the other stuff that I'm doing, I really need to stop.
you have one of the craziest schedules I've ever heard of.
Yeah, and so I had a couple hours a day I wasn't doing anything, so I decided it's time to become a board-certified hypnotherapist. So now, and one of the, and I've really been looking into it, and I really believe that since the subconscious is the direct effect on the emotional output that the law of attraction picks up on, using hypnosis, it can be a very effective tool to get to the subconscious. And so this is the inner dialogue right now is a form of self-hypnosis when you understand how to use it properly.
One of the things that really caught my attention in what you were talking about there for a bit was you mentioned, for instance, the difference between being somebody who has a job and who doesn't have a job, and the two experiences of going after getting another job, and how it's usually so much easier for the person who has the job because of their inner dialogue. Really, what we're talking about there is a level of self-confidence. The person who has the job says, well, hey, I got a job. That proves I can get a job. I already have the evidence. I'm living the evidence right now. Whereas the person who doesn't have the job says, oh, I don't have a job. I can't get a job. And the self-talk plays out according to what the experience is. In other words, it's a what is-itis kind of thing. This is what is, so that's the way I'm going to respond to it. And this is where I love one of the messages that Abraham Hicks gives out, which is a belief is a thought that you think over and over again. It's also the basis for how propaganda works, right? We're talking about news and we're talking about political parties and all that kind of thing. Well, they're basically, both sides are trying to propagandize you by repeating the same thought over and over again, getting you to repeat it in your own inner dialogue, knowing that if you do that, it will become a firm belief in your own way of thinking. They want to implant it as an ongoing belief. But like you're pointing out, you don't have to just put up with that, whatever their programming is. You can actually create your own belief. And the way to do that is by changing your own inner dialogue and repeating your preferred inner dialogue over and over again so that you develop that new belief. That's pretty powerful stuff.
It is powerful. And a lot of times people will dismiss, again, without opinion on this or trying to offer opinion on this. I've heard people, talk about, President Trump doesn't know what he's doing with all his tweeting. Well, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, he's very effective with it. He will say something over and over and over. And he tries to make it as shocking as possible so it gets as much attention. But embedded in the message is fake news, no collusion. So then that becomes a narrative that people are saying.
Right.
And his base, it particularly responds to that. So you literally will hear him tweet something. And then when they interview his followers or his supporters, they will then mimic exactly what he said. And it's amazing that, he is actually, President Trump is one of the absolute best presidents that I'm aware of, or politicians I'm aware of using the law of attraction. He really, whether you agree with him or not, he is an expert at the law of attraction.
Oh, he is. He is a very, very skilled, deliberate creator. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're in favor of him or against him. It's just, he just is. It's just true.
And that's something that a lot, we don't do the political stuff here. It's not our mission but he believes what he says, or he creates an inner dialogue, repeats it over and over, and you just see how he's done it. He never doubted, any of this stuff. He just keeps saying, and it becomes his truth. And the more he repeats it, the more people believe him, and the more he believes it. It's such an incredible belief system, and I'm very excited that first of all that I have that ability. Now, I'm not saying how he's spinning it or whatever, but I have that ability to do my own. Have that ability.
That's how you climbed out of your hole all those years ago, by leveraging this fact, the fact that we can control the inner dialogue and use that ability to change our belief system so that we start seeing the world differently, so we start interacting in a better way and end up improving our circumstances and attracting into our lives what it is we've been wanting to attract all along.
Yes. And that is such a, that's why I love this whole belief in living. We started talking about now earlier when we were, when you said now about 72 times So we started with a lot of nows in the beginning, and I love how we started with that, because the right now at this moment, and this is how you begin, a direct, if you're sitting in your car or you're listening to this at home and life's kicking your butt and you believe life's kicking your butt, you can stop that. You can stop that downward spiral thinking and say, wait a minute, I'm here. I'm tuned in, and at this exact moment, at whatever time it is or wherever you're listening to this, whether it's a month after we did this or not, at this exact moment, everything I'm thinking is in my power to control. I can change how I'm viewing things. I can look at it through a different lens. I can adjust my own lens. Instead of looking at what's wrong today, what is right today? Instead of looking at my defeats, let me look at my victories. And, you know, even if you have nothing but defeats, you can look at the fact that I have survived all of these defeats. I'm still here. There's a reason. There's a point. And then when you can build on that, that's where it goes. People pick up on that. The energy, that law of it, it isn't just what you're inviting, but the energy that you're putting out, the energy that people pick up on. People want to be surrounded by that. And it attracts. When you sit down and interview, you can, the energy you put out is so much more important than what you say. It really is. There's a guy that got a job the other day that we've been working really hard on his inner dialogue. He sat down with this local insurance company and he did a wonderful job in the one-on-one interview with he was being interviewed by three managers. He did an incredible job with that. Well, then they gave him the testing part where, you know, they gave him a scenario where he had to add up numbers and give a quote over the phone, and he totally blew it on that. Uh-huh. And he almost went into a neck. And he said, then he reminded himself, but I knocked the interview out of the park on the first one. So then he met with the same group afterwards. And he said, well, one of my strengths is the fact when I really mess up, I can understand I messed up. He said, I realized before we even start, I totally destroyed that second part. It was something I lost my confidence. I didn't know what I was doing, and then I sort of folded. The fact that I could identify that, I am capable of changing it. If you let me go back in there right now, I will do it again perfectly and prove that my strength is my resilience and the ability to change.
Wow, good for him.
They said, and they were like, we don't need you to go back in there and do it again. You have the job.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic.
And what sold him, what his belief, if he would have been in that negative, you know, putting out that negative energy stuff, self-defeating, hugely self-defeating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, that's a really good example of how powerful our control that, and I use that word advisedly, our control that we already have over our own inner dialogue does make a difference. Because he could easily, like you said, he could have gone the bad direction. He could have been on the dark side of the force, so to speak. And he owned up. He said, you know what, I screwed up, but if you let me do it again, I can ace it this time. He refused to allow his inner dialogue to be changed by circumstances. He insisted that his inner dialogue was going to be what he wanted to be. Boy, more power to him. I'm just impressed by the guy.
Yeah. And that's when you realize you own it. That's when you realize you have it.
Mm.
And you have this thing that is inside of you that goes beyond what you think is control. Most people think, well, that test blew it out of the water. No, that one blew out of the water. What got you the job, the negative is you screwed up the test. The positive was your attitude toward it. And that's what they're looking for. That's the intangible that is picked up. That's the energy that is picked up on.
There's an old song from the disco era back in the late 1970s, early 80s. I think it's by Donna Summer called I Will Survive. And that's what I was thinking about when you were describing how even when you're in the worst possible circumstances, you still have the ability to turn things around, to change your perspective. You can decide there's a good thing going on. Even if I can't find anything else that's good going on, I can find that. I will survive. I'm still alive. I am breathing. As long as I'm breathing, where there's life, there's hope. You can start with that even if you have nothing else. That's really powerful.
Yeah, and there's also another way to look at it. There was a time when I was turning my life around. I was a few years into turning my life around, and I was leaving Anna Maria Island, the place I loved, to go move to South Carolina to run a treatment center there that I did not want to go. I didn't want to leave my comfort zone on my little island. It was an awesome place to live. However, my next step would be, I was sort of in a position, I had nowhere to go but there. So I had to go. Well, to be honest with you, Walt, it took me a while to get this mindset, but in that move, in that from Rock Hill to Rock Hill, South Carolina, from Anna Maria Island, Florida, I moved my worldly possessions in the back seat of a sedan. That was it. I had some clothes. I had nothing. And people said, "Well, Joe, that's a negative. I'm sorry you're going through that." You know, one of the most freer days of my life was that day.
Really?
I loved that. I loved the fact that I could pick up and move on an instant. I now have semi tractor trailer loads of crap. I'm in my house right now and I'm looking around. I don't need all this stuff. Why is all this stuff even here? It's ridiculous. And I mean that in a very positive way, that I don't need all this stuff. In fact, not that I'm planning on moving, but if I ever move again, I've already made up my mind. I'm not taking anything but my clothes, and not even all of those. And I'm just going to go get new stuff. The least amount. I don't need all that. Those possessions mean nothing. That day that I moved from Florida to South Carolina, I was not encumbered by stuff. I wasn't encumbered by. I could have gone anywhere and moved that day. The freedom attached to that was awesome.
Mm.
And so I look at that time of my life. At the time, it seemed so helpless, but at the same time, looking back, it seems so free. And that's, again, my perspective, which is my inner dialogue, is controlled by that.
Well, you had a choice. You could choose which way you were going to look at it. You could choose it to look at it like you were losing everything, or you could choose to look at it the way you did, which is, I am free. I can just move on a dime. I don't have to think twice about it. How nice is that?
When I was driving up, once I got to... for those that would know the route, I took 95, you know, up to whatever that cuts over to 77. 77 goes from north of Columbia, South Carolina, all the way to the Rock Hill area.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I don't know why I remember this mindset. Again, I had nerves. I was moving. I didn't want to move. But yet a side of me, well, as soon as I started heading north on 77, I was a little over an hour away from where I needed to be. And there was a side of me, there's a sign inside of me or whatever, there's something came out, and I was thinking about the Indiana Jones movie or something, at the very end of the movie where he's riding off in the sunset in victory or on to the next adventure. And the end of the movie, at that, I forget which one it said, and the adventure continues.
Yeah.
And I'm going up that road, I'm going, and the adventure continues. I get up every day and the adventure continues. There's freedom in that. When I was incarcerated and they shut the door behind me, I had a perspective of, well, this is finally done. I finally am dealing with the worst thing that I've ever had to face. And that was the worst thing I had to that point in my life. And I'm going to deal with it. So it wasn't fear. It wasn't disgrace. It was like, okay, thank God this is over. That was my inner dialogue. I'd already started working on it at that point. And today, whatever comes up, I try to readjust that dialogue. I try to, I'm a human being. I don't do this perfectly every day, but what I do find myself capable of every day is at some point when my dialogue has turned negative, I can flip the switch back quickly.
Mm.
And that is something that I can do. I can't always stop that negative dialogue from happening, but I can quickly, when I identify it, flip it back. So instead of losing days at a time in negative thought or negative preoccupation, I have the ability to say, now it's down to at worst a couple of hours.
It's funny too when you said, "And the adventure begins." I'm hearing John Williams' Indiana Jones theme, da 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 da. You're playing in the background,
exactly.
Right?
That was playing in my head as I was going up, and I remember it. Those orange letters that they use,
right?
The script that they, you know, at the end, I remember it. I don't know why that popped in my head. The adventure continued. That music played in my head, and I'm like, "Well, this is freedom. I'm starting a brand new life in a brand new state." It was exciting.
Isn't that an interesting word to use about something that you originally start off with feeling dread about? It became exciting. What a powerful testimony to what happens when you change the way you think about something.
Well, and that inner dialogue, here's the excitement anxiety process is one of the first things. I was giving a I think the first or second public speech I was giving. I was giving a talk to a group of college students at VCU here in Virginia, and I had the top similar topic. I don't remember the exact name of the topic then, but it was a similar topic to what we're talking about with the inner dialogue. And you know, there are a few hundred college kids there, and I wasn't nervous, but I had anxiety about talking publicly. I believe so much in what I say. There's not a I sort of embrace the idea that, yeah, if I stutter, stumble, that's just, whatever, it doesn't matter. So I don't usually get too nervous, but I for some reason, again, first time, I think it was 300 people, I was a little nervous. And the speaker before me was an older gentleman who had done this before and quite a bit. And he gave me the greatest advice that ever helps me with public speaking. It helps me in other areas too. He said, Joel, he said, anxiety and excitement are the same physical reaction in the body. Mm. Your perspective of which one it is what matters. He said, you're not anxious about being in front of this crowd. You're excited to be here.
Mm. That's
true.
Like,
oh my goodness. That was powerful. That was powerful. And so that inner dialogue then could program, wow, I'm really excited to be here. And that's the first thing I said. I'm excited to be here. Internally, I was nervous.
Butterflies.
Yeah, but I wasn't. I mean, because I stepped up there and I viewed it as excitement. If I'm excited about something, I'm not viewing it with dread. But the body, if you had a ability to monitor the heart rate and the release of various hormones, excitement and anxiety produce the exact same reaction physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
that's
just
true.
Your view of which one's happening. So that's a great tool, and that's an inner dialogue tool, because you get to determine which one that is. Is it exciting, or are you anxious about it?
That's an interesting point, because there are a lot of people who suffer from anxiety just in their regular lives, not going up to speak in front of an audience, but just day to day they're dealing with anxiety. What a great perspective to recognize that anxiety, another word for it, is energy. And that you can, depending on how you look at that energy could actually be really good if you come at it from the right perspective.
Well, and when you're giving, when you want a little, you want a little excitement. You want to get up there. You want to, if you're giving a public speech or you're performing or even day-to-day work stuff, if you don't have a little excitement about life, you don't want everything to be, here we go. That's when life becomes mundane. You want something like that. You need something to push that envelope. Performance is increased by challenging and feeling and not just phoning it in all the time.
That's a great point. I'm going to keep that one in mind. Anxiety and energy are excitement, I guess is the word. Anxiety and excitement are basically two sides of the same coin. They're the same thing. It's just two different ways of looking at the same thing. That's really, really important.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a great tool people who do struggle with, when I say struggle, a lot of people with beyond normal anxiety, there's a normal amount, and there's people that are debilitated by it. And when they're able to flip that switch immediately to, this isn't bad at all. This is really, I'm excited about being here. People have asked me to talk to them. So why would I be nervous? They care enough about what I'm saying to make this happen. Mm-hmm. This is exciting. And when you look at that, it's like, wow, this is such a different way of pursuing something that you didn't realize you had. You have this power. Everybody has this power to view things how they choose to view them. And the anxiety and the excitement, that is one of the, and there's millions of little things like that. That's one of the simplest fixes of inner dialogue.
It's funny. Because as you're talking about that, 6 years ago, September 26, 2012, was when Louise and I started this podcast, the LOA Today podcast. And I remember feeling that day something that I could have interpreted that as anxiety, but I turned it into excitement because I was excited. It's like, oh, this is going to be a fun adventure. I don't know what's going to happen, but this is going to be fun. And that's the way it was. And it continues to be fun to this day. But you're right. I mean, that energy that you feel, if you choose to look at it as excitement rather than anxiety, it really changes it. If I had approached that first podcast with the idea of feeling anxious about it, I would never have interviewed you 3 months later, and we would never have become buddies doing co-hosting the show for years after that.
Yes. And that to me, that's so exciting that it is exciting that we have that power. Mm. And you know, no matter what's happening in your life, when you can flip switches internally and adjust that perspective and that inner dialogue to challenge yourself to greater things, the excitement of life, not the anxiety of life, the excitement of life, it feels like, wow, I have such an exciting life, or it sounds so much better internally than I have such an anxious life.
Mm.
I have an exciting life. And once you again choose that, the body responds, the mind responds, the subconscious then says, huh, we haven't been anxious all this time. We're really excited. So it brings excitement. It brings, wow, this gets us moving forward. It gets us to that point where that next step happens and that next step happens. And I don't like living in a world that doesn't have excitement. I love what I do. I'm passionate about what I do. To see people literally come to you and make changes, and all people matter when I'm dealing with them. They're all, but this, particularly the most defeated, the most helpless, the ones that really don't understand how their power, to watch them empower themselves and then just become far beyond what they ever believed. That is, you know, wow. And I get paid to do that. Wow.
How's that for a good combination, right? Could you have imagined that all those years ago when you were in the depths of being a gambling addict, or before when you'd been arrested for what had happened with your father's company and so forth? Could you imagine yourself being into a place where all of a sudden you were making money, helping people climb up from nothing to something? That must have been inconceivable back then.
The day on it was the day before Thanksgiving in 1995. I went before a judge and was found guilty of a felony. And I remember believing, I pled guilty to a felony. Mm-hmm. I remember leaving the court saying, "Well, I probably will never be able to do anything other than some basic stuff." But I'm grateful. I remain grateful that I was able to overcome this. But I knew I had a big chat. But I could not envision. I could not have imagined having what I have now in my life. And I don't mean just possession wise. I mean, right. My life.
Right.
And I couldn't imagine all of that. And yet here we are. It is a script that I didn't even have. My wildest imagination couldn't have created this. And so I have this world that I live in, and all of it changed when I allowed slowly. It's, when you can look back over 20 something years, it seems like it was instant to a lot of people.
Right, right.
But this was a process of simply changing my perspective through inner dialogue change.
And when you change your perspective, it changes everything. That's the thing. Yes. I mean, you did it just by changing one thought process.
Yes. And it gives you that. And one of the most sad things when I see people that do not have that ability or unwilling, everybody has the ability. When I see people with the unwillingness to step in internally and say, "Let me change this," but they become so dependent on the opposite side of that they're not willing to move from it, and then they're their own curse at that point.
Yep. Well, this has been great. Thank you for giving us a preview of the talk you're going to give down in Plant City, Florida in about, 10 days, 14 days, something like that. It's been great.
Yeah, 13 days from today.
13 days. Okay, there you go. So I know you're going to knock it out of the park, but thanks for giving us the preview. Before we go, you're a pretty darn good coach. People are probably picking up on that, especially if they're new listeners. How do they reach out to you if they want to talk to you more in private and in detail?
Joel Elston. At gmail.com is the simplest way. An email comes in. I always respond to email. JoelElston.com is my website address. Either way, you can get me, and I will get back to you. If I can't help you, I'll find somebody that can.
Sounds great. Joel, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
You too, my friend.
All right. We'll see you all as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.